We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now New Galaxy Broadcasting presents Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. The Coalition of Planetary Empowerment is an organization designed to give its members tools and information to empower them personally, in relationships, and in business and employment, but also to give them a voice and the ability to help transform political and corporate governance to support the true needs and desires of people throughout the world. Inalienable and Free focuses on the need for government and corporate business interests to be responsive to the will and desire of their constituents and consumer shareholders.
Good morning, world. My name is Johnny Bluestar. I'm the host of Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. We actually created a promo for this show, which you probably may have seen, or maybe you didn't. But in that promo, I played a portion of our ex-Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson's speech at the Virginia Military Institute. Quite frankly, I was very impressed with both the words and ideas lying behind this speech. I was amazed because, you know, of his recent background and some of the troubles he had. But Tillerson always seemed to be sort of heroic in fighting the forces against him to try and be a true diplomat. So I respected him a lot, but still this speech is amazing. You could regard this entire program as a running commentary on this segment of his speech as applied to the role of Israel in recent geopolitical events. In fact, the program is titled Integrity and Truth, the U.S. and Israel in Gaza and Syria. I want to say that although I applied his comments to this topic, I have no idea what his own point of view is. But so I want to just say, this is looking at you'll see what I mean in a second. Well, let's go ahead and hear the full part of the speech that I'm going to take parts of during this program.
As you look forward, your role in building a brighter future will depend on more than simply your education and your skills. Your contributions to society depend on a firm, ethical foundation of personal and professional integrity. As I reflect upon the state of our American democracy, I observe a growing crisis in ethics and integrity. Above the entrance to the main building on the campus of my alma mater in Austin, Texas, are inscribed the words, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Comes from the book of John, chapter 8, verse 32. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The founders of our American democracy were, I believe many agree, were crafting the structure and foundational documents guided by divine inspiration, if not divine intervention. An essential tenet of a free society, a free people, is access to the truth. A government structure and a societal understanding that freedom to seek the truth is the very essence of freedom itself. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It is only by a fierce defense of the truth and a common set of facts that we create the conditions for a democratic, free society comprised of richly diverse peoples, that those free people can explore and find solutions to the very challenges confronting a complex society of free people. If our leaders seek to conceal the truth, or we as people become accepting of alternative realities that are no longer grounded in facts, then we as American citizens are on a pathway to relinquishing our freedom. This is the life of non-democratic societies, comprised of people who are not free to seek the truth. We know them well. Societies in Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. You can complete the list. A responsibility of every American citizen to each other is to preserve and protect our freedom by recognizing what truth is and is not, what a fact is and is not, and begin by holding ourselves accountable to truthfulness and demand our pursuit of America's future be fact-based, not based on wishful thinking, not hoped-for outcomes made in shallow promises, but with a clear-eyed view of the facts as they are and guided by the truth that will set us free to seek solutions to our most daunting challenges.
I'll tell you, when I first heard this, I was thrilled. I still, just listening to it again, and we're going to break it down in small pieces, I would say that if Tillerson really believed this, understood it, and was really understood the divine nature of these words and what the, and how they are, how they resonate with the spirit of God, in my opinion, I'd vote for him for president. And I'm, as you know, by if you listen to this program, I'm not in favor of establishment Democratic or Republican people. In general, at least, those parties do not reflect me in the establishment, maybe the progressive a little bit. But anyway, I really like the speech. Let's hear the first part of it and let's analyze it.
As you look forward, your role in building a brighter future will depend on more than simply your education and your skills. Your contributions to society depend on a firm, ethical foundation of personal and professional integrity.
Tillerson's speech is new, but his thought processes in these passages echo back through the centuries to the founding of the Republic, this Republic. In fact, Jefferson formulated his thoughts in different words, but with the absolute same intent when he said, quote, "I am sure that in estimating every man's value, either in public or private life, a pure integrity is the quality we take first into calculation, and that learning and talents are only the second." How important is that? We sometimes make a fetish out of our education and our societal and career moves forward. But really, the foundation of being a true human being and a true citizen is certainly integrity. The goal of this program is to discuss the very foundations of the American Republic, which the ideals of which the ideals formulated in the Declaration of Independence are totally resonating with those. These ideals were not embedded completely in the Constitution or the laws constructed by Congress, enforced by the executive, interpreted by the judicial. The Bill of Rights was just the start, and it took a civil war to rid ourselves of one of the most outrageous contradictions in our body politic, which proclaimed at the very beginning in the Declaration the equality of man. You can't have the equality of man and have slavery. One of our contentions is that the principles of the Republic reflect a higher source than even human conscience, which entails personal and personal and professional integrity, as Tillerson emphasized, is perhaps the brightest shadow in this world of a kingdom or dimension beyond this world. In other words, integrity, conscience, these are reflections of a sort of what you might call heavenly virtues. Virtues beyond this dimension. But they're very important because they are the brightest shadows. God is always accessible to every man and is reflected in every religion. But what we call spirituality, the divine connection, is something we perceive best when we are inwardly free to use our God-given reason to reflect carefully on what we believe. Jefferson also said when writing to his nephew Peter Carr all the way back in 1787, quote, "Question with boldness, even the existence of a God, because if there is one, he must more approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear." God is not afraid of you reasoning. There's a famous saying from Luther, Martin Luther, that is, not Martin Luther King, but Martin Luther, "Reason is a whore." No, reason is not a whore. Reason is a guide. It's given to you by God to make decisions in conjunction with your spiritual alignment with his will. Yes, this divine connection is a state of consciousness where the very essence of you, of who you are, directly experiences itself as an intimate part of the source, of God. It is this connection that validates human conscience. The experience of source is an experience of pure righteousness. The will of God, as stated in the Lord's Prayer, is to make earth like heaven. And in the human experience, conscience is a reflection, a mirroring of the moon, so to speak, as the mirroring of the moon reflects the light of the sun. So conscience is a reflection of the experience of the divine presence. It is hard for me to imagine my amazement at the precise way Tillerson formulated his thoughts about American democracy. He said, let's go to S2 and listen, SB2.
As I reflect upon the state of our American democracy, I observe a growing crisis in ethics and integrity. Above the entrance to the main building on the campus of my alma mater in Austin, Texas, are inscribed the words, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Comes from the book of John, chapter 8, verse 32. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
Now, there are many ways to look at the Bible. I don't look at the Bible as a totality, as perfectly shaped. I look at it as a place where I can find gems of wisdom. And this is one of my favorite gems. One of the famous principles that I try to live by. Now, in my commentary now, I'm going to give my opinion about the application of Tillerson's words to certain events regarding Israel, Syria, Iran, and Gaza. I really have no idea how Tillerson regarded these events, as I said, and I'm not in any way implying that Tillerson would agree with me, although I hope he would. But that is not at all clear to me. Words can be inspired and come from a place far beyond ordinary human awareness. And it is for this reason, because of my own spiritual search and spiritual experience, that I honor this saying from the Bible, regardless of it being in the Gospel of John, but standing alone as what I believe to be essential truth in itself. The concept of truth is the intellectual correlate of the human mind of the emotional feeling based upon right or wrong we call conscience. So there's kind of parallel. There's truth, which is from the mind, or the analytic quality of the mind, and then there's conscience, which is based on feeling. In my word, the word truth in this saying can mean the direct experience of the truth in the divine presence, like we call God the truth, or truth in the sense of finding evidential reality in the world we live in this plane of existence. You can call God the truth, the supreme truth, but you also honor God as reflected as his in your own reason, as his reflected light in the human mind. Tillerson is so right in his conviction that today's crisis of democracy lies in the failure of many in government and the citizens who blindly support their decision-making to seek the truth in all things. And again, when we speak of the truth, we are speaking of the divine nature, which also includes conscience. But Tillerson here, as we shall see, is speaking of seeking the truth of events, of laws we believe in, and of outcomes that should naturally follow, and that's perfectly appropriate if you weren't talking about democracy. When our high government leaders take the oath of office, they promise to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. Now, how this is interpreted depends on the individual, his conscience, and his integrity to adequately reflect on whatever he chooses to believe. It is very obvious to me, and to many of you out there, that persons out of greed or lust for power or out of sheer ignorance can invert the meaning of the Constitution or of any formulation of righteous law. Under the shadow of one's lower nature, the very protections of the Constitution, whether it is in the freedom of press, the protection from cruel and unusual punishment, or the rights to keep our privacy and our assets from the intrusion of government without an express court order, can be turned into its opposite. In my opinion, the symbols of Masonry, which are essentially components of a legitimate spiritual teaching, have been inverted sometimes horribly, to be used to dominate, control, and distort the alignment of men with truth and conscience. So you can take anything. You can take the Bible and have wars. You can take the truth of certain teachings and do horrible things to people. You can torture them. Can do everything in the name of the Bible, of
of the Constitution or whatever you want if you don't have integrity. One of the most profound components of the American Constitution is the demand that war must be declared by Congress. Some of the effect of this rather clear component of the Constitution has been systematically destroyed by the concept of a unitary president who can make all kinds of decisions without the approval of Congress. This is exemplified by the War Powers Act, which can give the president the ability to act immediately, but with an ultimate timetable by which he must seek the approval of Congress. In this case, whatever military exercise or campaign he has begun can long be over before he acts. Now, this War Powers Act has not been used very much because of possibly its constitutional problems. But whatever the reason, in terms of attacking another country, international law as formulated by the United Nations and is agreed to by its Security Council members, for sure, demands that a country only advance an act of war against another country in legitimate self-defense or the approval of the Security Council. Even if Assad had ordered chemical weapon attacks on his own citizens, it would never have been the prerogative of the president to order an attack. In the first place, without congressional approval, and in the second place, in the absence of a direct or proximate and clearly predictable military attack against the United States or a clear resolution by the Security Council. To me, this attack, with its claim that chemical weapons were a red line as initiated by Obama, is still not constitutional. And despite its apparent relative unobstructed outcome, would have inadvertently triggered a reaction, could have inadvertently triggered a reaction by Russia, the Syrian ally. This could have led twice, he did this twice, to a wider war. To say that any kind of a crime against humanity automatically meets the criteria of taking military action is definitely not what the Founding Fathers meant. Wars need to be declared by Congress because the need for war demands consideration by the representatives of the American people en masse. And as we shall further see, there can be very illegal and dangerous reasons for waging an immediate military attack, reasons based on imperialism, quest for personal power, and for the financial rewards for certain elements that come from war. So, okay, we have a humanitarian crisis. Let's attack without the United Nations Security Council or the United Nations approval. Let's just go attack or without our own country's approval. Let's go ahead. How do you know? False flags are easy to create, and we have had some really big ones in this country. Let's play SP3.
The founders of our American democracy were, I believe many agree, were crafting the structure and foundational documents guided by divine inspiration, if not divine intervention. An essential tenet of a free society, a free people, is access to the truth. A government structure and a societal understanding that freedom to seek the truth is the very essence of freedom itself.
When I heard this sentence, the founders of our American democracy were, I believe, many agree, were crafting the structure and foundational documents guided by divine inspiration, if not divine intervention. I was staggered by its formulation. Why? Because in many ways, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights went much further than the simple inspiration. Why? Because despite their noble formulation of principles, the government they had organized, empowered by the few, enslaved many and put the rest of the population at the mercy of those who had suffrage. In other words, the words from Jefferson and others were clearly transcending their day-to-day practice of the government they had created after formulating these noble words. It is like God swooped down and began to write these words with his own hand, guiding them towards principles coming from the highest possible dimension of awareness, from the architect of all things. We have already noted that the action against Syria was an act of a unitary president without seeking even the approval of Congress in the formal way required by the Constitution and against certainly the rule of international law. But its precipitousness was also problematical. Did anyone really imagine that an attack of Assad on his own population, however unlikely, could ever have been an immediate danger to the United States? It did not require precipitous action. In fact, it required an exploration of the reality of the claim that Assad did it at all. But the attack was launched before any such claim could be explored rationally by the Security Council. Was anyone, Congress or the people of the United States, given anything to reflect on? Didn't Tillerson say the central tenet of a free society for free people is access to the truth? The government structure and societal understanding that the freedom to seek the truth is the very essence of truth itself. We're not meant to simply be reliant on covert intelligence from the military or anyone else to make a key decision like going to war. As Jefferson said, educate and inform the whole mass of people. Enable them to see that it is their interest to preserve peace and order, and they will preserve them. Well, we're going to take a brief break now. I'm going to explain a little bit how my company, New Galaxy Enterprises, can help people convert their novels to screenplays. There are lots of examples in www.newgalaxyenterprises.com of things that I've done of that nature. And then a really remarkable song that I helped write. I helped wrote the lyrics. Edgar Ahrens wrote the music. But Patricia Welch does a great deal on this song. We're just playing a part of it. It's called Love Never Withers. Let's go to C4 and M3.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. If you are an author and want your novel adapted to the screen or to the new high-quality TV series developed by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix, for example, I probably can help. My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a media content company, and I've worked on a number of adaptations, including a dramatic version of ventriloquist Paul Winchell's autobiography, an adaptation of a novel co-authored by myself and a Korean War veteran, an historical account of the Mexican Art Revolution, a science fiction screenplay based on a fictional novel account of Fallen Angels, and many other proprietary and client-based projects. We want our projects to be with high-quality potential and positive intent. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
That song really, it still continues to amaze me, because a lot of the work that I do, it comes from another level. I mean that. So inspiration from the divine presence, from God, is something I think a lot of poets and songwriters experience, but also people in government, people who are mathematicians or scientists. The feeling about it is that it's not coming completely from you, from your It's something bigger than you. Leonard Cohen speaks about this great when he won a prize from a Spanish prince, Prince of Asturias. And he writes about it, and you can find it on YouTube. He just says, well, I can't really say that I am personally the custodian. I am the author of these songs. I'm sort of the custodian because it's coming from a different place. And I think that the Constitution and the Declaration particularly is coming from a really high level, and I think we should listen to it. So in this next component of Tillerson's speech, it definitely spoke directly to my heart, SB4.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It is only by fierce defense of the truth and a common set of facts that we create the conditions for a democratic, free society comprised of richly diverse peoples, that those free people can explore and find solutions to the very challenges confronting a complex society of free people.
Yeah, as you remember, Trump recently launched his second attack on Syria. Russia and the U.S. both drafted resolutions for an investigation, but these drafts happened after the attack had been made and no resolution to investigate was passed. To be sure, many citizens, legislators, and the media were thrilled about the attack against the, quote, monster Assad, as Nikki Haley called him in the UN. But not everyone was so happy. In this short clip that we're about to hear, we hear one what I believe is a really responsible legislator, Tulsi Gabbard, not afraid to stand up to Wolf Blitzer, whose questions reveal his own unitary presidential bias. Let's listen carefully to N37.
Let's talk about this chemical attack. You tweeted about the attack, and I'll put it up on the screen. You tweeted this: whoever is found responsible, be it the Syrian government, Al-Qaeda, or ISIS, all have access to chemical weapons, must be held accountable. Who do you believe is responsible for that chemical attack that killed so many civilians, including so many children?
Here's the issue, Wolf, is what I believe, what you believe, or others believe is irrelevant. What matters here is the evidence and the facts. If President Assad is found to be responsible after an independent investigation for these horrific chemical weapons attacks, I'll be the first one to denounce him, to call him a war criminal, and to call for his prosecution, the International Criminal Court, make sure that those consequences are there. But the key is now with President Trump's reckless military strikes last night. It flew directly in the face of the action that the UN was working on at that time to launch an independent investigation, to find out exactly what the facts are, who was involved and who was responsible, so that the appropriate consequences could be levied.
So, Congresswoman, when the Pentagon says it was the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad who was responsible, when the Secretary of State says that, the President says that, they all conclude that they have the evidence to back it up. They say Assad did it, his military did it. You don't believe them necessarily.
Well, last time I checked, Wolf, Congress had the authority and the responsibility for declaring war, for authorizing the use of military force. So whether the president or the Pentagon or the Secretary of State says that they have the evidence, the fact remains that they have not brought that evidence before Congress. They have not brought that evidence before the American people. And they have not sought authorization from Congress to launch this military attack on another country. The fact is that the United States has been waging this war, this regime change war now for years, covertly through the CIA to overthrow the Syrian government. The result of this has been the suffering of the Syrian people, hundreds of thousands of people dead, millions of refugees, and the strengthening of terrorist groups in Syria, like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, whose goal is to overthrow the Syrian government. So this escalation that President Trump took yesterday in launching this military attack continues this illegal, unconstitutional war.
Well, we have Andy on the line here. What do you think about that? What do you think about the way that this was launched, this war, these attacks on Syria?
Well, Johnny, I think that we're dealing with a symptom of a deeper problem that's causing all of this. We have people who are making decisions of power, and they do not feel connected to everybody else. For whatever reason, their agenda is different. They don't want to understand the truth. They want to create the truth for whatever complex animalistic reasons they have. So we get people who make laws to suit their needs or define laws based on their accomplishments. And until we understand that part of the human psyche, these issues are going to keep occurring throughout the world and causing needless conflict. The other thing I wanted to say was, if we assume that we're all connected to the divine, as you say, then many things are divine. When scientists finally mapped the human genome, that was a deeply spiritual experience. When Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about astrophysics, that's deeply spiritual. Or maybe when you're walking in the park, you have a moment where you reach a divine inspiration. It doesn't have to be something out there that is an epiphany you only get once in life. It could be commonplace. But my biggest concern, as Tillerson said and Jefferson said, they want to create access to the truth, but we as a people have to want to find out the truth. He said something about eternal vigilance being the price of freedom. We have to convince our fellow people that they have to remain vigilant and seek the truth. We have to convince them that it's important enough that they monitor the truth every day and not just get lulled into a sense of complacency. And I think that's what will make the change in the world. If every person realizes it's their job to seek the truth, and it's that they have a responsibility toward other people to seek the truth, I think that's the key.
Boy, I couldn't agree with you more, Andy, and everything that you said. And I also agree that, you see, there's a connection between inspiration on the level of sort of a separated human consciousness, and when you experience the divine nature, which is a higher level, it's a higher frequency of vibration, it has certain definite characteristics. So it's a kind of spiritual awareness, but that definitely, that level contacts us in our ordinary waking life also. So it's not like just
I
because
guess what
you
I'm
have,
saying is it should be possible to walk through life connected to your source or divine. It should be possible to generally live that style and not have it think something other that you have to seek. It may be possible to get to a place where you just more or less most of the time just habitually act in that fashion.
Well, I think that it's rare. And I remember it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, because there's a training that takes place, a guidance that takes place to allow you to work in those other levels. It's not just like, ooh, I slipped into this thing and I'll stay in it for life. Maybe that happens to a few people. There's something called spontaneous or sudden enlightenment. But my experience of meeting many, many people, I don't think that that's the norm. We have to work to get to that state usually. We need to do a lot of things to learn about ourselves so we can be ready for that.
As we're brought up as children, then we need to be taught the importance of delayed gratification so we learn the value of that work and other works.
Well, I'm going to thank you, Andy, for your contribution.
Thanks, Johnny.
I'm going to get back to, we were talking about this illegal, unconstitutional war, as Tulsi describes what's going on in Syria. My point in talking about this is that the effect that both countries did not jointly find a way to investigate the reality of the chemical attack, one to see if it actually happened, been staged by terrorist groups, or never happened at all. I mean, this is after the attack, they're deciding to, oh, we've got to find out about it, but they don't even want to find out about it then. Since I'm focusing on the United States in this discussion and have already developed the case for its illegality, I'm talking about the war, the attack, and that the attack was solely reliant on covert intelligence and launched before a meeting by the Security Council that might create a legal basis for the strike, one has to come to the conclusion that the U.S. administration did not prove even the reality of the threat or for the chance of Congress to debate anything, even though a simple debate followed by a strike might be illegal in itself. I want to just comment on what Andy was talking about here. What kind of a psychology is going into such gross and obvious misalignment with the the purposes of the Constitution and the rules of the Security Council. That is not the norm here. This is something that's rather obvious, I think, to certain people. But are they around? Where are people joining with Tulsi Gabbard? I don't know. Why is this going on? Well, I besides the psychological factor of ignoring everything, I think there's because there's a complex agenda involving Syria and the desire for regime change with some military involvement, perhaps including Israel, which attacked just right after that, but also way before that and for a long time, Iran-based facilities in Syria. Of course, outside of the military strikes that have recently occurred, the actual agenda is a matter of speculation. But speculation or not, there is likely to be speculation when fire and fury fill the air from non-nuclear weapons with the prospect that there could be fire and fury from something else, given the Syrian allies in the region, namely Russia and Iran. There is no common set of facts here to debate. So a fierce defense of the truth would mean fiercely defending the opportunity to be provided with a set of facts before a precipitous and dangerous military excursion takes place. But in this case, and in all related cases, defending the Constitution must come first. And this would mean all the conditions for declaring war must be met. We are those free people who must explore and find solutions to the very challenges confronting the complex society of free people, as Tillerson says, then we must provide not only Congress with the facts, but the United States citizenry as well, so that Congress can adequately represent their constituents. In a republic or representative democracy, don't ignore we the people, for we are in charge. And for a set of facts so critically important, we should follow Jefferson's comment in a letter to Thomas Ritchie in December of 1820. That's right. Way back then, quote, "We are not afraid to follow truth wherever it may lead, nor to tolerate any error so long as reason is left free to combat it." Well, I think some people here, they just want to cut off reason. Maybe they think, along with Luther's comment, that reason is a whore. Anyway, I don't think reason is a whore. I think reason is a asset given to us by God. Well, now, Tillerson, in the next element here, it says another extraordinary thing, and so explicitly in SB 5.
If our leaders seek to conceal the truth, or we as people become accepting of alternative realities that are no longer grounded in facts, then we as American citizens are on a pathway to relinquishing our freedom.
Yes, the last example of our attack on Syria owing to an alleged chemical attack by Assad on his people demonstrates an administration that is bent on acting without the consent of the citizens of the United States through its representatives in Congress and providing limited information that we're supposed to accept on the basis of authoritative sources, in this case, the military and possibly, say, the CIA. And that's what Wolf Blitzer was trying to demand from Tulsi Gabbard. He wanted her to say, oh, I'm sorry, we should be listening to these great people. No, she said, we should be listening to the voice of the Congress. And in order for Congress to really operate, the people themselves need to know a lot. You don't just hide everything in little closed doors meetings. These doubts about the legitimacy of the attack, incidentally, were briefly discussed in the short clip from Euronews. That's N36.
Russia has presented what it says are witnesses from Duma in Syria who support its claim that an alleged chemical attack on the town was staged. At the headquarters of the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons, which is investigating the attack, Russian officials claimed Western powers had jumped to conclusions. It seems that common sense demanded to wait until experts examined everything with their own hands. However, the USA, Great Britain, and France didn't wait. And even before the experts started their work, they declared that for them, everything is clear. The guilt of President Assad is in no doubt. During the briefing, 11-year-old Hassan Diab and his father both claimed they didn't believe there'd been a chemical attack.
Yeah, this is like, I've seen a lot of different alternative media. I don't know if the people out there are really looking at it. There's a lot that's good and there's a lot that's bad. I personally like programs like Blackstone Intelligence. I like programs like We Are Change. The Real News is really great. These are some of the alternative media I like, but there's a lot of alternative media that's absolutely ridiculous. The Last American Vagabond is another one that I happen to like. Not all these people are perfect. I don't agree with everything they say, but they do things like, you know, like bring people in who have reported in Syria, who've risked their lives, journalists who are not really covered by mainstream media, talking to citizens, talking to people who claim to have been there during one of the chemical attacks, when it was very obviously a bunch of people come in and they start dousing people with water and they start, saying these terrible things about what's happening when really possibly nothing had happened. You have to look at that. You need to look at it. So anyway, let's listen to a little bit more of Rex Tillerson, SBC.
This is the life of non-democratic societies comprised of people who are not free to seek the truth. We know them well. Societies in Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, you can complete the list. A responsibility of every American citizen to each other is to preserve and protect our freedom by recognizing what truth is and is not, what a fact is and is not.
Getting back to Wolf Blitzer, that little discussion with Tulsi Gabbard, the United States was deliberately set up so that it could be controlled by a civilian commander-in-chief. But what happens if our own civilian leader surrenders much of his authority to the military and accepts their counsel without obeying the Constitution and going to the civilian leaders of government, i.e. Congress, which has the right to declare war? Now, part of seeking the truth in the area of geopolitics is being truthful to one's promises in the area of domestic and international law. The move of the U.S. Embassy was in violation of clear resolutions by the Security Council and the will of the majority of the countries of the world. Trump proposed that he would be able to move the embassy without much resistance, but set off a firestorm by virtue of the move. Here's what Nikki Haley said in regards to the vote of the Security Council to prevent the move. To try.
Will those in favor of the draft resolution contained in document S/2017/1060 please raise their hand? Thank you. Those against? Thank you. 14 votes in favor, 1 vote against. The draft resolution has not been adopted owing to the negative vote of a permanent member of the council.
The fact that this veto is being done in defense of American sovereignty and in defense of America's role in the Middle East peace process is not a source of embarrassment for us. It should be an embarrassment to the remainder of the Security Council. The United States will not be told by any country where we can put our embassy. Buried even deeper in the jargon of this resolution is the accusation that the United States is setting back the prospects of peace in the Middle East. That is a scandalous charge. What we witnessed here today in the Security Council is an insult. It won't be forgotten. It's one more example of the United Nations doing more harm than good in addressing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Today, for the simple act of deciding where to put our embassy, the United States was forced to defend its sovereignty. The record will reflect that we did so proudly.
That's really interesting, amazingly amazing considering what happened later. The fact that Nikki Haley could say we have the right as a sovereign nation to have our embassy where we want it does not address the issue of the absolute necessity of a sovereign nation keeping to its international agreements, whether in treaties in conformity to the agreed upon rules of the United Nations or in trade agreements, etc. All nations have to, and you know, the will of the Security Council if they agree to it. All nations have to surrender some portion of their absolute sovereignty if they want peace and trade with others in the world. That's just diplomacy ABC. During the speech, when they got to Jerusalem and made this official opening, Jared Kushner, again, promoted the idea the United States had moved to Jerusalem to promote peace. This is what he said.
On December 6th, President Trump was very clear that his decision and today's celebration do not reflect a departure from our strong commitment to lasting peace, a peace that overcomes the conflicts of the past in order to give our children a brighter and more boundless future. As we have seen from the protests of the last month and even today, those provoking violence are part of the problem and not part of the solution.
Well, listen, Lynn. Lynn is on the air. How are you doing, Lynn?
Oh, gosh, I'm all ready. I just wanted to share again. Actually, it's really ties in exactly to what you're talking about right now, about peace, peace movement, not just, we did the Jewish Voice for Peace.org last week, but this is UNAC.org. It's UN, it's all capitals. And you want to go to the one that says, that has the huge banner and all the movements and all the groups. It's called United National Anti-War Coalition. So it's UNAC.org, and the movements and what they're doing is so fabulous. But when you go Google it, you might get sidetracked. So you just go through them until you see the huge banner with the different races and religions and kids. And you want to go to the one that says United National Anti-War Coalition. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes, thanks a lot, Lynn. Lynn is helping us with the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, and she's kind of the member services director as we begin to develop this organization. And she's bringing us every week another organization we should look at. Well, anyway, so far we've been quoting mainly from Tillerson and Jefferson, but now let's try George Orwell. In his famously prophetic book, 1984, the government of Big Brother developed the mind control protocol called doublethink. Here is the definition. Doublethink means the power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them. So, in other words, they're trying to make people live in contradiction with themselves. So here's another application of a shorter but quite famous Orwellian quote, an application of the same thing. Doublethink, applying it to the official opening celebration of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. The quote is, "War is peace." A precise application of the doublethink protocol for an event that featured Trump, Kushner, Netanyahu, and some religious clerics speaking of peace while people in Gaza were being killed and wounded, by the dozens being killed and by the hundreds being wounded. Further, why is the introduction to the event being led by an evangelical who has clearly said that the Jews who do not accept Christ are damned, even when he was attacked by the press for the past statements about the ultimate, his former damnation of Mormons, Jews, and Muslims before this particular event? What kind of doublethink is that? The question is, why are we supporting a massacre in Gaza when we say we are for peace in the Middle East? Further, with all the protesting in Gaza and the West Bank and other parts of the world, why do we pretend that there's no problem generated by the move and it's all about peace, whereas it's really all about conforming to the very biased pro-Israeli stance when they are committing crimes against humanity while Trump and his team are making this hypocritical peace offering? In the final portion of Tillerson's speech, he makes a call for us to get with the program of facing up to our responsibility to take charge of our mission as citizens of a democratic country, willing and able to rein in the abuses of government, business, and the wealthy to keep us from discovering the reality behind the veil of their deception based on their hidden agendas for prestige, power, and undue rewards. Let's listen. SB7.
And begin by holding ourselves accountable to truthfulness and demand our pursuit of America's future be fact-based, not based on wishful thinking, not hoped-for outcomes made in shallow promises, But with a clear-eyed view of the facts as they are and guided by the truth that will set us free to seek solutions to our most daunting challenges.
Tillerson's solution here is the profound solution to our problems as a nation and the answer to one of our most main dilemmas, the possibility of one of our endless wars mutating into a planet-destroying nuclear exchange. You know, Haley, in her discussion in the United Nations, placed a lot of blame for the conflict with Hamas. After more than 50 Palestinians were killed by Israeli fire at the Gaza border following the U.S. embassy move to Jerusalem that was celebrated on Monday. Haley had laid blame for Monday's violence and the Hamas extremists and insisted it had nothing to do with the opening of the embassy, a move that infuriated Palestinians. She said, "I asked my colleagues here in the Security Council, who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would," Israel said. "No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has. In fact, the records of several countries here suggest they would be much less restrained. Moving to the embassy to Jerusalem was the right thing to do," Haley said. "It reflects the will of the American people." After her little speech, before the Palestinian envoy began to speak, she walks out. So this is the circumstances that we're getting into. And what I want to do is I want to play again what Tillerson actually said, and we will close the conversation.
Responsibility of every American citizen to each other is to preserve and protect our freedom by recognizing what truth is and is not, what a fact is and is not, and begin by holding ourselves accountable to truthfulness and demand our pursuit of America's future be fact-based, not based on wishful thinking, not hoped-for outcomes made in shallow promises, but with a clear-eyed view of the facts as they are and guided by the truth that will set us free to seek solutions to our most daunting challenges. It is also that foundational commitment to truth and facts that binds us to other like-minded democratic nations, that we Americans will always deal with them from the same set of truths and facts. And it is truth that says to our adversaries, we say what we mean, and we mean what we say. When we as people, a free people, go wobbly on the truth, even on what may seem the most trivial of matters, we go wobbly on America. If we do not, as Americans, confront the crisis of ethics and integrity in our society and among our leaders in both public and private sector, and regrettably at times even the nonprofit sector, then American democracy as we know it is entering its twilight years.
Powerful stuff. Before we completely end, actually, I'd like to speak a little bit more about the claim that Hamas did it, that Hamas was responsible, and no one else was responsible, not Israel, certainly, for killing all those people. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported on May 17th that Israel had attacked various Hamas posts in Gaza overnight after machine gun fire had hit an Israeli house. According to this report, there was no human casualties, but just some property damage. So there was more than just reprisals on the border. What is the culpability of Hamas for the dead and wounded? Were they the overriding reason for the march? Max Boot, a columnist for some people's favorite newspaper, the Washington Post, says, of course. Hamas, the terrorist organization that controls Gaza, would not accept any U.S. embassy anywhere in Israel because it doesn't accept the state of Israel. Its charter says that Palestine is a land that was seized by racist, anti-human, and colonial a Zionist project and vows that the resistance shall continue until liberation is accomplished. He further says, amid this despair, Hamas has mobilized tens of thousands of Palestinians to march towards the border fence. Its aim is to pressure Egypt and Israel into easing the blockade and the Palestinian Authority into resuming payments. These payments, incidentally, have been cut off and caused a great deal of problems for the survival of these people in a normal way. It, quote, getting back to Max Boot's statement, Israel is caught in a no-win situation. It can't allow its border to be overrun. No state can, but if it tries to protect its neighbor, it runs a high risk of human tragedy and a public relations nightmare. So, getting back to it, Hamas was responsible for all this bloodshed, even though it did not fire a bullet at any of the hundreds that were wounded or the dozens that were killed. According to Amira Haas and Haaretz correspondent, let's listen carefully. The decisions on the march of return events was made jointly by all groups in Gaza, including Fatah, which is the Palestinian Authority. But in the case of Gaza, Hamas won the government control. The most organized group, the one that can work out the required logistics, equip the return camps, points of assembly and activity that were set up a few hundred meters from Gaza, the Gaza border, control the information, maintain contact with the demonstrators, and declare a general strike to protest the embassy move. That's Hamas. Even a Fatah member sadly admitted this to Haaretz. This doesn't mean that all the demonstrators are Hamas supporters or fans of the movement who are obeying its orders. Not at all. The demonstrators come from all sectors of the population. So we see here a little bit of a problem. And this is where we need to, you know, we need to look at the truth. Did Hamas control everything, these thousands of people? Or did they have their own reasons for forming this march? Because a lot of them were personally affected. Well, anyway, we're going to go out now and I think it'll be fun to say that we're going to say goodbye, and then we'll be going out with a song we dedicate to all our lawmakers and government officials who should know better but are due for a supreme moment of repentance. Here's Fax Waller and Ain't Misbehaving. I can't wait until we finally get to see every member of the Senate and the House get together under one roof and belt out the song with conviction and certitude. Thanks for joining Dr. Rodier and I on Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. As we go about developing our new organization, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, we hope you will consider the importance of taking part in the electoral processes of your government and asserting the rights you have to vote for the companies you respect and love by casting your ballot as a shareholder or as a consumer with what you buy. We hope soon to make this possible through a social network responsive to your needs to dialogue about your rights as a citizen, but also to be able to effectively act in concert with like-minded colleagues to find representatives of government and business executives who will hear your voice and appreciate your message. See you soon.
No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you, for you, for you, for you. I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with flirting, it's you that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Like Jack Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere, what do I care? Your kisses are worth waiting for. I don't stay out.
Well,
thank you.
No place to go. I'm home about it, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving,
No, 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 no.